baby, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on my whoa, 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 Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Dylan Rush. He's a creative footwear designer and former senior creative director at Nike. We're here at Future Now, virtual sneakers to cutting edge kicks, which is on at the Portland Art Museum through August the 11th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Dylan.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So the first room as you come in is a big yellow room, and it's the Dornbecker section. So what's that, Dylan?
So this is a project Nike does with the Dornbecker Hospital of kids that are kind of going through, you know, something with the medical procedure, or we team up with them and we would work with them to kind of design a dream shoe of theirs, and that would kind of allow them to try whatever they wanted, materials, use their imagery, graphics, and kind of give them free reign to make something, and then they'd go to auction and it would support the hospital and their kind of medical bills. So
I mean, as a designer, do you ever learn anything watching, you know, amateurs design shoes?
I think the approach a lot of the kids had was it's very free-spirited, and it wouldn't be a typical approach of a mainstream shoe, so you actually get to some things that are really cool and unique. I think a lot of their passions will come through in these shoes, as you'll see, and I think it does open your eyes to like a less serious point of view and a more I guess hopeful or dreamful point of view of something they really are passionate about, which you do learn to kind of tap back into that and that, mm-hmm. that childhood curiosity. So mm-hmm. definitely.
And they're all kind of custom, right? It's like what you do in middle school, like drawing on your shoes, multiple colors, layers, designs.
Yeah, again, they have free reign, so I think it's you know, something they can do anything they could think of. There's one in front of us that has baseball stitching where you wouldn't normally have that on a shoe, but it's
they've made a Dunk Low, which is white background with light blue panels, red laces, and then the front is white with red stitching like a baseball.
Yeah, super cool detailing. It looks like they even have some kind of writing on the collar that kind of is elusive to the writing on the field, so mm-hmm. really cool detailing. Yeah.
So you used to be the senior creative director at Nike. So what was the shoe that you're known for?
I was known for the Roshe, which came out in 2012. It was a shoe I started designing in 2010. At the time, there wasn't kind of a shoe I was seeing that I thought I wanted or the market needed, so in my free time, I came up with the idea of the Roshe and did a drawing, shared that with some of the team. They, at the time, it was a very deconstructed shoe, which they said didn't fit the marketplace, so it didn't go through. So I kind of decided, well, I think I need to build this as a prototype. Hmm. And got out the sewing machine and got the 3D team to help make an outsole and made a prototype. And when I showed the prototype to the business team, then they're like, yeah, there is something here, and it kind of... the rest is history.
Well, what is the Roshe? Is that a running shoe?
It's a lifestyle shoe based on running principles. It was a very simple thing of like quarter support, heel support, and kind of that running wedge. And I just made the simplest form of it based on some of my minimalist design philosophies. And it hit the market, and a lot of people didn't know what to do with it. And it was on sale at Nordstrom Rack, but there's lines down the street at, you know, stores like Mercer 21, and it created quite a bit of hype, and within a year or two they were selling 40 million pairs of it. So
how many?
40 million, and it
40.
And it grew much higher than that. There's rumors that it got to 100 million pairs, so it became a very big shoe and kind of defined this era.
Who if you were walking around the mall, who would be wearing the Roshe
in 20 2012, 2013, everybody would be wearing the Roshi.
Like dads?
It was more, teens. It started out with teens, and then it spread to almost everywhere, and it actually became this thing that you'd see it in airports and all around the world, and there was this funny instance where Kanye West actually kind of saw it, and he decided he wanted to replace it with his shoe and his line, so he made that an objective of his to.
Oh, that was his inspiration.
Inspiration to replace that. He did it at, I think, 5 times the cost of the Roshi. So I don't know if he understood the point of a democratic shoe, but he made an attempt at it, which, you know, good for him.
Well, what was his shoe called?
The Yeezy 350.
Okay.
So it had a similar, very simplified upper and midsole, and it was popular, but again, it was a $300-$400 shoe. The Roshi came out at $75, and the goal of that shoe was it was available to everybody. And
was that achieved through minimalism?
Yes, that's something that I've always been passionate about. So when I was designing the shoe, one of my goals was to decrease the amount of pieces in a shoe. A typical shoe would have anywhere from 35 to 50 pieces, and I got the Roshi down to 22 pieces. So the simplified elements of it, how the tongue was connected to the upper, and then the insole, the original insole or footbed, it was just a piece of foam. So you could have a direct contact, and you could wear it wet or dry, with socks, without socks. It was just a versatile shoe that gave people different options to wear it. Yeah.
Was it used for athletics though? Do you ever see anyone running in the street in them?
Oddly enough, because the shoe was called the Roshi Run and it was put out by Nike, people ended up running marathons in it, believe it or not. And they probably weren't supposed to run marathons in it. And the name ended up being changed to the Roshi One for that reason, to kind of send a message that this isn't a running shoe, but being that it was inspired by running, you know, functionality, it was runnable. It probably wouldn't give you the support you needed under the distances.
So we're in the, I think the main kind of conceptual room, and this is where there are shoes that are like gigantic, and you know, you put them on in funny ways, and the laces are very different. So we're looking at this thing, High Concept, by Safa Sahin, and they look like sort of jet shoes. They're kind of black and green. The soles have a big gap under them. You know, they kind of look like speedboats, and there's like little bumps on the sole, and only sort of three layers of lacing around. It says Balmain. So what is this?
So, I mean, Balmain's a fashion brand, and the funny story is that Safa Sahin is a really great designer, very conceptual. He actually did work at Nike for a short time, a few years back. He's a Turkish designer. He actually kind of made his presence because I think he did a lot of this conceptual stuff on Instagram through Photoshop, and I think when he came into Nike he was actually so forward thinking. A lot of the stuff couldn't work for a mainstream market, but he left, he became the head of design at Balmain, and obviously has done work like this, which I think is really, really cool, really conceptual.
This is called the Unicorn 2021.
Yeah, probably not the most functional shoe, but a beautiful shoe to kind of admire and kind of think about other ways you could approach footwear design. Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at something like this, I mean, could anyone wear this?
I'd say it's definitely for the more fashion-forward person. It would work for anybody, but you'd probably get a lot of stares in the street, so it's definitely for the person looking for some attention.
It's got like a 4-inch heel, you know, would you fall over in this thing?
It's probably not the most stable shoe. Again, it's definitely something that's more for aesthetic purposes. I would never imagine someone running in this or going very far, but again,
they'd wear it to a club.
Yeah, definitely a statement piece.
Yeah. And so as a designer, like, what goes in your head when you're torn between the perfect shoe for the market and then the designer statement piece in your imagination?
Well, I think there's a few things you have to think about. One is, you know, whether you're working off a brief or something you just want to create, it's like, what are you doing this for? What's the purpose of the shoe? Does it have a performance reason you're making it, or is it a lifestyle reason? I think when you come down to performance, it's really based on data and athlete insights. When you go to lifestyle, it's definitely more of like, what kind of statement do you want to make? What kind of vibe do you want to put out? What works with your dress and your personality? So I think it's an approach based on usually those two things. Mm-hmm. Is it performance, lifestyle?
So I always think of design as you're making a product, you're making a work of art for somebody else, and you really got to do what they want. Whereas art, you're on your own, you're doing it for you, you're making one, and you're in charge completely. Do you ever get that latter freedom in as a designer? You're saying you can only do that when you're off the clock.
Yeah, typically at Nike, that wouldn't be something, you know, that would be working for a brand that big, because when you are having a consumer base that's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, typically something like that wouldn't work. And opening molds is quite expensive. The production is extremely expensive. You know, you have to pay for all that. So I think on this exhibit and a lot of the shoes here, you see like pieces that are one-offs. It's that stuff that they only probably made a few of them, if not just one, just to kind of set a precedence of, hey, look, this is what's possible. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't kill your imagination when you're a designer.
No. Again, it's like, I think people love to see the possibilities, and then that could come in maybe smaller elements, a smaller degree into the final product. But
you know, the kind of postcard image of this show at the Portland Art Museum is these pink shoes.
So this is called the Octopus. I think this is by Mr. Bailey, or Daniel Bailey, who has the design studio Concept Kicks. So I believe these were done in 2018. I believe he did these, and they were definitely, as you said, the latter of the previous, of a, very much an art piece of kind of what could be possible.
So they're pink. They look like suede, aren't they?
This looks like suede with, it's hard to tell if it's a real outsole, but it looks like TPU rubber, a typical high top with, I think the artwork is that Takashi Murakami's kind of classic artwork, the Japanese artist.
So the top bit, you know, where you pull the front up, has like eyes and a mouth and jagged teeth, and there's Murakami eyes with the, you know, eyelids drawn. The sort of thing holding it all together are these straps that come up from the bottom, and they have octopus suckers on them.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit more, I mean, it's mostly pink, but there's this pearl colored tentacle coming, kind of grabbing you from beneath, and then these red on pink sort of patterns. I don't know, almost like animal print. I guess octopuses have.
Yeah, I think you definitely captured their ability to camouflage with the environment, but I think it's a really cool interpretation of Murakami's artwork in a shoe in a really unique way. So the way it's even has the strap that goes around kind of holds the shoe together with the tongue piece and the collar, it's really unique. So structurally, yeah, it looks like a great idea. And I think, I don't know if it was intended, but it's like, you know, when you're the octopus tentacles with the suckers, it looks like the traction would be great.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, form and function solution. In another vitrine, there are these Air Force Ones. Again, they have Murakami sunflower kind of faces. Then they have this other life to them, where they're, you know, tokens in on crypto world.
Yeah, so this was a project that I think Nike was doing with Artifact, which was basically they were trying to figure out how to make shoes in a digital environment and how you'd probably bring it into like gaming. So a lot of these were released as NFTs. So I think they had their, you know, the crypto Ethereum thing around them. And then I think you'd buy these and maybe get the shoes in the video game world as well. But I think the hope was that the value of them with the NFT kind of certification would kind of go up. But I think a little bit that's kind of fallen apart in recent years, but at the time it was definitely a thing.
Was that just a bubble, the whole token in shoes?
Yeah, it's, I think just across the art world, it seemed to be a bubble. I think the last time I read about this is like 90% of NFTs lost almost all their value, so.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Dylan Roche. He is a creative footwear designer, and we are at Future Now, Virtual Sneakers to Cutting Edge Kicks, which is on at the Portland Art Museum through August the 11th. What kind of AI tools are available right now for where you just say, make me a big pink sneaker?
A very popular one is Midjourney. A lot of people are using that. It's run by prompts, so you can put in a prompt and have it spit out something in just a few seconds of what you're thinking. It does take some art and knowing how to write a prompt correctly. The one thing that I would say is AI is still at the point now where it can only pull from what exists. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely referential to things that exist. So it might not be able to get you into a space of something that doesn't exist, but it can definitely help you think about what the possibilities are. Mm-hmm. There's other products like Viscom.ai, which is something where you can do like a little sketch, and in a couple seconds it will turn it into a full-on rendering that I think they have the ability to make it 3D now. So you can do a little sketch and voila, in a few seconds you have what took probably a day to do. Mm-hmm. So
that's crazy. Is that coming for your job?
I don't think so, because again, these are tools, and you still need somebody to craft it and curate the idea and the story. So mm-hmm. It's never going to be able to come up with, I mean, I don't want to say never, but hopefully it's not going to be able to come up with an idea by itself and manufacture it by itself, mm-hmm. and know how it fits, right? So you still have the human foot, and you need to know how it feels, which AI will never know how to do that.
Right. Just tell me a little bit about storytelling when you come up with a story before you come up with the shape of the shoe in your head.
Yeah, I think there's the story element is important because it gives what I'd say the soul to the product of the shoe. I think I've done quite a few. It's something that I always try to put into my design work, but the Roshi, for example, it was based on kind of this minimalist ethos I had through my meditation practice. So I kind of used the idea of a Zen garden, or what's the Roshi's a Zen master, and the elements of, you know, the colors of moss, which has like this dark green, how the stones are kind of more organic, how there's elements of change where parts move, or how one side could be more serious versus like one side could be sculpted more fun with something more rounded. So I think there's these elements that help you create the shape and the colors that I think's instrumental in making something and gives an actual emotional attachment with somebody, and almost like a sentimental value, because mm-hmm. there's something there that probably resonates with them at some level versus just a product. It's just, you know, it's a collection of materials that doesn't really have a connection. Mm-hmm.
We could talk over this. So we're looking at the Back to the Future shoe, right? Which was made for a movie, and then Nike decided to kind of make it for real, the self-lacing shoe. It looks like a ski boot. They've pulled it all apart, show all the components. So you've left Nike, right? So you're not going to have these resources to do this kind of thing. What do you think you're going to miss about Nike as you go off on your own?
Well, I mean, to your point, Nike, you know, being the number one shoe company, they have a massive amount of resources and the ability to, you know, make very futuristic ideas. So I think it's thinking about new ways to make shoes that maybe don't require that in terms of construction or something like that. So it is a hard thing to kind of wrap your head around when you do leave a brand that big. But again, I think anything's possible now. It's like we're moving into an era of quick ideating and manufacturing processes. So the landscape's shifting for sure. And I think the ability to do more future forward thinking without those resources is going to be probably something that becomes more and more feasible for designers.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of team or company are you going to be operating now?
Well, right now I'm just kind of taking a break and putting my feelers out and seeing what options there are. I think, you know, there's lots of brands that need help, and there's a lot of companies that are looking for people to work on ideas with. So, mm-hmm. I think the sky's the limit right now, and just kind of take my time and figure out what's right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there'll be a Rush brand?
You never know. I don't want to say no. I think I could think of, if there is a concept that warrants having a brand around because it's a unique idea, then yeah, maybe it wouldn't be my name, maybe it would, but mm-hmm. I think it's definitely a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as someone who's so specialized in shoes, you must look at buildings and chairs and curtains and things and think, what could I do there, do you?
Yeah, I'm always looking at other products. I think part of the design process that really leads to new things is cross-pollination. So, you know, even doing music on the side, it helps, like, the process.
What are your music brands?
I have the two bands, Bodycon and Years Around the Sun, which, you know, it's been some projects I've been working on for quite a few years now. But for me, it's always like a process that you'll learn something in a musical process that will actually influence a design process and vice versa of how you get to an idea. So same thing with architecture or, you know, a chair. It's like you'll find out that they're using some material that you would have never applied in that way. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's as great as a creative is to make sure you're kind of looking at the bigger picture to not limit yourself to how you could, you know, maybe mix things up differently.
Mm-hmm. So Dylan, it seems to me you work in the realm of imagination, and you obviously have to keep your eye on manufacturing and, you know, the science side. But all these new tools seem to be taking up the slack of imagination, doing things, you know, that a creative person used to do. So what does that leave for you? What do you think it'll be the thing that tools can't do in your part of the world, your process?
I think, again, the element of storytelling and bringing that soul and that human aspect to it is extremely important, and it's going to be probably even more important moving into the future. But like anything, I think a lot of these, you know, advances in technology and these digital tools, it's all they are tools. It's like for a construction worker, it's a hammer. I think it allows us to actually ideate faster and think differently. But again, I think it's going to be that element of still the human imagination of how you can use these to, you know, change or evolve your creative process. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're already seeing it happen. So, again, I don't think it's going to replace us. It's just going to help us move forward and kind of become stronger in that creative realm.
But to be creative, you have to have, you know, knowledge of art and, you know, art history and literature and a feeling for what is poetic in the world and what's human. I guess a young designer has to focus on that now.
Yeah, you still need to know a lot of history and what was done in the past. If you come in and you're not aware it was done and you're trying to recreate and, you know, someone's like, hey, this has been done before, it's like, it's that experience you still need. I think it's what shapes any creative. It's the elements of all of that past knowledge that I think create your vision and your point of view. You know, growing up listening to music and, you know, this band and that band, it's like all those elements are going to kind of create your point of view and the things that you like and that shape you as a designer or a creative. So I think that's probably going to be one of the most essential things in the future.
Mm-hmm. That you have to feed your creativity with something.
Yeah, you have to feed it and decide what you think is beautiful, what the world needs more of, and I think what can help get us to a better place, and really be cognizant of your decisions, you know, why you're doing something. Is it done with purpose? Is it done to make money? And really make kind of those hard decisions and choose what's important for you.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, having looked around this show, it's a big show about sneakers and conceptual footwear. Would you like it? Would you come again? Would you tell your friends?
Yeah, I think this is a great exhibit, especially to see the kind of the limits, past, present, future of footwear. You know, I've been in this industry for quite a while. There's a few new things here I've seen, but a lot of it is stuff I've been made aware of. I think anyone interested in design, fashion, footwear, I think it's a great exhibit to attend and kind of dip into the minds of some, you know, great footwear designers for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's just stand here. It's still a bit loud. Oh, I should have decorated my house in Amazon bags.
Yeah.
I had enough of them.
Many years.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was creative footwear designer Dylan Rosch. He was here talking about Future Now, virtual sneakers to cutting edge kicks, which is on at the Portland Art Museum through August the 11th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Dylan.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart.